Welcome to the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Right Way. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson. The election is now days away. And to wrap up our election mini-series, we're doing a bit of a summary show featuring Greg Hughes, our business partner based in Wellington, and Anna Steele, our business partner based in Rotorua. We talk through the main themes that we see out of all the three podcasts that we've had on the show previously. I would suggest if you want to, maybe check them out before you listen to this summary special, but we will go over the main themes that come out from all of those podcasts, and maybe we'll also discuss the questions that haven't been answered, in particular the amount of money that we're borrowing from an economic point of view and what that means long term for us. So we hope you enjoy this summary special. We go over lots of different topics and try and get some thought going, so hopefully this creates some ideas and thoughts of what is needed from a small business owner's perspective. Make sure you subscribe if you like the podcast on the platform where you're listening to us. And also make sure you check out Right Way and all the social media channels. Anna, Greg, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello.
Kia ora.
So all the listeners, if you haven't listened to the three interviews we've done with the small business spokespeople for the main parties, Labour, the Greens and National, probably listen to them before you listen to this episode. But or you could maybe say there's a summary. Whatever you take about it. But today we're wrapping up our mini series we've done on leading up to the election. The election, when we record this, is a week, just over a week away. It's Thursday the 8th when we record this. And we've got Greg and Anna on today to talk a little bit about what we take away from these conversations and also what's been in the press and news for business owners, and help to decipher what's important and what's, you know, what the political parties say versus what reality is, which sometimes isn't aligned. I think that may be a really good starting point, and I'll start with Anna. Like, what was your overall take listening to the three podcasts we did, and what was your thoughts?
Overall, I found it interesting that if you hadn't have known who you were listening to, they could have almost been from any political party, to be honest with you. There was some key similarities between them, you know, reducing compliance and you know, going digital and all of these things. Like there was nothing very, you know, you've got Labour and you've got the Greens, who are our left parties, and you've got National, who are our right. They're all just very centrist, aren't they? They there wasn't a massive thing in there that made me go, that's the one that I vote for. That's the one that's going to be better for small business for this reason. I felt that there was a similarity across them, and I felt that there was their initiatives weren't fundamentally game-changing for small business in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You know, we're just changing around the fringes kind of thing, which is what government in New Zealand do all the time anyway. But look, I thought they all had some great initiatives and great ideas, and I guess we're going to go into those a little bit, but I didn't find there was actually that great a distinction between the three of them. What do you think, Greg?
Yes and no, just to be...
Of course.
Exactly. Float down.
We do want a podcast that's all like we all agree, and that's boring. Let's have a bit of a debate.
So, I thought all three were very interesting, and Stuart Nash presented, as he naturally would, as the government saying this is what we've done,
and he is the current minister of small business. Yeah, and I think the other part for listeners is he's also the minister of revenue. So you know, there was a lot he talked about, which I think. Technically, he's under the revenue portfolio, but has a massive impact on business. So, sorry, Greg.
That's quite right. And as you're quite right, Anna, when you said that they all talked about digitizing business and driving efficiency. So, Stuart Nash's was more about what they've done and continuing on the theme. Andrew Bailey, obviously, as the spokesman for the major opposition party, can only talk about what they would do. And Chloe Swarovic was different again, because I felt that she had started off talking about the people she'd met, and so more micro level than macro level, my feeling there. I do think that there was two major differences, and this is a philosophical differences between National and Labour, is that I had a feeling that Stuart Nash was presenting about they'd done the wage subsidy, which I think everyone agrees is outstanding, but then promoting the loan, the extension of the loan, how more people can get the loan. So it's very much the government either spending the money for you or lending you money. I think philosophically, Bailey was more on this is how we will free money up. So if you take a very naive approach and say they're both going to spend the same dollar or borrow the same dollar, not going to spend and borrow it. In one instance was we'll lend it to you or we'll spend it for you. And the other one was we'll take less money from you so you can spend it for example, tax reductions. So there's a philosophical difference between the two. Chloe Swarbrick was more holistic in terms of let's focus on New Zealand and buy New Zealand. Yep. I thought she was very good, although I felt there was a degree of naivety when she was talking about production in New Zealand. And let's face it, New Zealand, we cannot compete in the global market producing in things like manufacturing. Certainly clothing for that. So where she perhaps could have gone is where a lot of designers are doing is that they're designing in New Zealand but actually manufacturing offshore. But I think fundamentally that was the difference I picked up is that one was we'll lend you more money and spend it for you. Another one was you can have the money. And depends on where on the political spectrum is where you'd align with that. I'll see you on here.
No, you go.
I also thought. I just lost my train of thought.
It was my plan all along. No, yeah. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, that's about as socialist and as capitalist as we get, right? With our divide between Labour and National, and I agree with you that those ideologies is the great difference. But I didn't actually feel that either of them were massive game changers for small business.
Oh, great. Yeah, I completely agree on that.
And defense of Chloe, not that I feel that she needs me to defend her, I feel like her being cut off, she might have been going to go and go on to explain something similar. And, you know, and there are some wonderful people producing clothes in New Zealand now, Greg, if you know, into buying women's fashion.
Yeah, I am aware. Yes,
I think. Look, I think the one thing that, and for everyone who may have not listened to the podcast, two of them I did remotely. So we used a Zoom system to record for that. Was Stuart Nash and Andrew Bailey, and Chloe was the first one we could do in person, and there was no doubt. Doing in person, me and Chloe could have kept speaking for another probably 20 minutes quite easily because there was a much more natural flow. And I think that you probably even heard that in the podcast. Mm. So I think you're right. I know there was a bunch we were going to cover, but she sort of had to go. But
I mean, I can't imagine why a podcast with Right Way wasn't far more important than the Greens policy announcement for public transport.
Well,
but, you know,
that's what I thought. She's got her priorities James Shaw was in the corner going, come on. We've got a cab together, or whatever, you know, and then I'm like, really? Aren't I more important? Anyway, I think the one thing I would say, like meeting all of them, and I guess what I took from not necessarily their policies, but meeting them as individuals and what was in a small window was reassuring was, you know, these three individuals are all probably working, I don't know how many hours a week at the moment and a lot and fair enough. That's what they're paid to do. But the enthusiasm that they all turned up with, I think the knowledge they all had of the, you know, that, as you said, Greg, Chloe talked a lot about, you know, Auckland Central, and we did focus a bit on that because that's the seat she's running in. But the clients she's been, the businesses she's been dealing with, Andrew talked about that. And I just thought what was encouraging for me, and I know it's their job, they were really enthusiastic about what they spoke about, and they were actually all really good to deal with, like amazingly good to deal with. So I got reassurance that, we kind of at least, we might not agree, but we've got some good people that are nice people to deal with and good human beings. Now, is that going to change the nature of what we do? Not necessarily, but that's just my little segue into just dealing with them individually. I think
politicians need love too. What you're saying?
Yeah, you know, and they're normal people.
So touchy feely there, Anna, honestly.
I know, I do it just because I know how much you love it, Greg.
I think, look, I'll throw a bit of a curveball question here, and me and Chloe actually touched on this, is, and I think this touches on the point that both you guys said, is that fundamentally, there is nothing significantly different to what we are going to be getting for business owners out of any of those policies, really. Like, it's, yeah, they're on the same things, like, cool, we'll reduce compliance and we'll digitize. Well, cool, we should be getting more efficient at that. Let's be brutally honest. But there is no doubt, when anyone talks about tax in this country, we freak out. We cannot have a mature conversation about it. And I think it's an interesting concept for us and business owners. We are, you know, we are obviously mindful at the moment of, hey, am I going to have more tax? I'm going to more cost. I'm, you know, the outlook is uncertain. And I get all that part. But why don't you think we can have a honest conversation about tax? And it's not necessarily about agreeing on something, but we don't want to talk about it.
It's very interesting you say that. And I think tax has almost become the bastion differential between the parties. I mean, if you think of the last Labor government before this one, when Michael Cullen put the tax up and his last statement saying is, you know, the rich pricks comment. It's a mindset thing. Yet it was, I think, Judith Collins, when she's interviewed recently, she said who was the politician in recent years that she admired most. And she said Roger Douglas when he was Minister of Finance in the Labor government. And what did he do? He changed the tax system where we had a top tax rate of 66 cents on the dollar. So
just to interrupt you, I guess, and I'll challenge you here, Greg, but Key government, they put the GST up. Now, they didn't. They didn't allow it, but they needed, you know, they needed to. We're, again, out of the GFC. You know, we had to pay for Christchurch. You know, we were taking on debt, similar situation, probably not as much debt. It wasn't as much debt. But, you know, we can't – it's, you know, we don't want to deal with what is a – it's a confronting issue for people. And – but we can't necessarily keep things constant.
Well, the problem we have, Stu, is we have a tax system that doesn't enable change in the system. If you think about it, the working for families has direct benefit to families. But as a result of that, over half of New Zealand taxpayers don't pay any net tax.
Mm.
But no party is going to commit political suicide and come out and change working for families without doing something that is at least tax neutral, if not more. You have the situation where in tax take in dollar and percentage, I think I saw something like 15% of the taxpayers or 10% of the taxpayers pay 80 or 90% of the tax take. I think the fundamental question comes back is that do we, and it comes back to almost a comment I made at the start about the difference between Andrew Bailey and the difference between and Stuart Nash, is that do we want the individual to have responsibility or do we want the collective, given that there has to be a safety net, and at what height do we have that safety net? I don't think in New Zealand we're prepared to have a US situation, who, by the way, are horribly overtaxed anyhow with all their multiple taxes. You know, healthcare, education, all free. It is, for the faults we have, it's still the envy of the world. But
it was just on that. I was listening to a podcast, and it was the BBC, and they were interviewing a Republican, and it was all about the fact of going to a public health system would be we cannot think about that. How would we cope with that? And the guy from the BBC goes, you realize that probably the only thing that's loved more than the NHS is the Queen, like, and it's like a non-negotiable. But we're quite a, you know, anyway, Anna. Tax, your take.
Yeah, I almost think that there's a couple of reasons I think we fear it. I think it's, you know, that whole birth, death and taxes, you know, thing. I think that comes back to people not really understanding it. And I think that, you know, when the political football that was, you know, capital gains tax was brought up, and you know, every person that owns a bachelor, a farm or anything in New Zealand nearly choked on their morning tea, you know, they were can't have a capital gains tax. And I really felt at the time that there was a lack of understanding in New Zealand about the purpose of tax and that redistribution of and its use as a tool for fairness and for running the country. And I think that doesn't change with a couple of changes and tweaks to the tax rate, or that doesn't change in anything sort of legislative. I think there's a few things that can be done. People, and maybe some of that it comes naturally through the things like digitization of, you know, getting businesses online and all that sort of stuff, and you know, cutting the red tape and the bureaucracy and making dealing with the IRD simpler and all of those things that those three or two of the podcast talked about anyway. And that if it's simpler for people to understand what they need to pay and when they need to pay it and how they need to pay it, then actually it's not so terrible. Most of the problem that we have with tax is that we get this, you know, what clients will say to us is this unexpected tax bill in the post, because, you know, because that's actually not how we do it, you know what I mean, by email, when I find that actually quite unrealistic. So I think that's on a little bit on education, but that's on people like us, right, to educate our clients. But it's hard to do it one by one. And so I don't know if any of them, I mean, I think you asked, was it Andrew Bailey? Sorry, I'm getting the three mixed up now, about financial literacy. I messaged you at the time because I was like, oh my God, you asked him my favorite question. I know, I'm a geek, people.
Cheers.
And I don't know that he actually adequately answered it, because what are we doing about the lack of financial literacy amongst small businesses? Because
just before we go on to financial literacy, can I just, question on tax and showing my age is that I believe, and if we bring this back to small business, fundamentally the biggest change to our tax system that had an impact on business was the introduction of GST.
So now, 1985.
Yeah, and the fact is on everything except for financial transactions.
Yes.
I mean, you go to Australia, is this a cooked chicken? Is it a, you know?
Oh, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. Okay. So what that did, that's spread the tax base to a consumption-style tax, easy to understand, easy to administer, easy to process. Everything else after that has been tweaking. That has enabled that engagement of the tax base, and I feel that, as you quite rightly say, is that a lot of it is tinkering after that. But if we fundamentally say, how do we collect our tax? I mean, I think you spoke with Stuart Nash, didn't you, about AIM?
Yes, he talked. Yeah, and he talked about.
Yeah.
I can't remember, something like only 2,000 businesses are on AIM.
I was really surprised at that. I feel like we must have about 10% of those.
Oh, easily. Yeah, my clients who are using AIM, and for those that don't know, this is where you basically, a company pays its tax as it goes, are loving it. Because
it's in line with GST, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
But also works on the fundamental that if you are showing a profit, you should have the cash to pay your tax at that point in time. And so it gives absolute clarity to a business of what their position is. So I've got clients who have no problem paying their tax bill, but are on it purely because at any point in time, they know exactly where they are. So if you think about that as a tax model in relation to small to medium businesses, it is very similar to GST. It's filed at the same time. Yeah. It enables a base across. And I feel that is where technology obviously is driving the efficiency in it. But to me, that's how tax applies. I mean, we've got rid of gift duty and death duty fundamentally for one single reason. It was costing us more to collect the tax by a significant margin than any revenue you're getting. when tax rates are high, I can remember back in the, and again, show my age, in the 80s and 90s, where I spent all my time advising clients how to legally avoid tax. I didn't talk to them about how to make their business better because the tax rates were so draconian that it just made sense to do that. Now we have a tax rate where the top individual tax rate 33 cents in the dollar and the company's 28. The difference is so negligible. I hardly ever talk to my clients about that. Funny though is that with the indication that Labor want to put the top tax rate up, that there's a driver now for clients to say, what do I do? How do I get out my retained earnings? Things like that. So tax can't just be a philosophical, it does drive behavior.
I think
I think
just conscious that do we want a podcast about tax? I asked the question, I think one of the interesting parts there is, you know, as we've discussed internally, AIM is a really interesting change in how we actually, you know, view tax. And I think AIM, especially now, you know, if we think about going into lockdown and the COVID situation where earnings have dropped, profitability of businesses dropped massively, straight away your taxes adjusted because of business performance. Yes. And that's partly been, well, it's not partly, that's only been able to be done through cloud-based technologies like Xero. So, I think all of them actually talked about technology in some ways. Stuart Nash, particularly about digital enablement. It is a massive area that, you know, and we've seen this with businesses to get understanding of their systems and processes, getting businesses digital, getting paperless, getting their systems correct, because these systems that the government want to put in, like AIM, have massive benefits. So I think a final point before we move on to the next section. Oh, no, we're going next. So the question I had going into all of these three podcasts is, all we hear is the word jobs, 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 and then we'll hear it about another five times later in the day. Jobs come from confidence and increased activity. Now, you know, there is a sense at the moment, there is no doubt certain industries are still doing it tough. Tourism's the obvious one. But we, you know, I know speaking to our partners, our staff who deal directly with our clients I deal with directly, things are going all right. It's not, you know, there are some people that are actually above, and I've spoken to other people in, say, banking, where, yep, there's the odd client that's doing it tough, but overall, people are doing okay. I didn't take much out of any of them that really goes, how do we build confidence to employ people? Because it's confidence that creates jobs, and it's profitability of businesses, it's in more stable cash flow that does that thing which make people hire people. I kind of got annoyed. I get annoyed with this jobs thing because you're not dealing with the actual issue at hand. Like, that's a result of stuff. So what was your guys' take of what is our sense around confidence at the moment? You know, are we getting anything from the political parties that actually builds our confidence up?
Confidence is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and therein lies the problem. Is that if you look what Scott Morrison's doing in Australia, they're chucking billions at employing staff and things like that, but they're openly saying the risk is that people will just bank it. The clients, and I think I've said in a previous podcast, the clients I have who have stopped and looked at their business and are good at running their business from a business point of view as opposed to good at selling the widgets they make, are feeling confident that they can ride out the storm, not necessarily confident that they're going to go into expansion mode. And I agree with you. No one, I suppose, comes back to the old story. You never feel more confident than when you've got a dollar rattling in your pocket. You know what I mean? Fundamentally, and it is increasing liquidity, which both parties are openly trying to do, but by different means, that will drive confidence because people go, actually, yeah, my job is safe. I mean, look at the sale of new cars. Look at the any tradie out there, they're flat tack. You know, renovations are through the roof. So that's people going, well, I can't do my overseas holiday, etc. I do believe there's a split economy. I do believe that people who are untrained and unskilled are probably more likely to be less confident, double negative, because they just don't have the confidence that their paycheck will keep coming. But I don't believe people are confident that they can see the end of the tunnel. I don't think they believe that either party has really got much control of it, that it is a global pandemic and we are living in a global economic environment. And fundamentally, I think the term was used, at the moment we are a blind cul-de-sac at the end of the street because we won't let anyone in because we're too scared to. And because of that, right, whether you agree or not, what that means is we don't have transactions that we normally would have. Transactions drives cash. Cash drives confidence.
Yeah. And I guess, look, I think, you know, to my point is that, you know, it's not the just purely the government that can instill confidence into what we do. There's lots of factors. And, yeah, it's a fair point. Anna, what's your take on that?
It's been interesting, hasn't it, in that, you know, we don't have the tourists coming in, for example. We look at the tourism, but, I mean, I was listening to the radio this morning and bed nights are up in, you know, and I think it was in Rotorua, and, you know, the place is humming with, well, as soon as Auckland came out of lockdown, to be fair. I know in the central North Island, a tourism business, a client of ours, you know, they're absolutely pumping. Pumping. They have very quickly rejigged what they do because obviously the tourists stopped overnight. But every weekend, they've just got loads of higher spending Kiwi people coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, you know, so they just started doing some different things that would appeal to Kiwis. And I've got a few different examples that, you know, of clients that are doing that. So I guess my feeling is, bringing it back to the summation of those three podcasts, is I think the people that are confident regardless of who's going to get in next weekend. I think that the good businesses, the people that have got the or are utilising things like that funding that's available at the moment and stuff like that to look at their businesses and do some different things, are kind of okay. The ones, I agree that the lower people on lower wages, because they're going to be the first to get the chop, all those sorts of things. Yeah, I didn't hear anything in any of the three podcasts that made me more or less confident. The only thing that I would say about that is that business, and that's business, you know, inverted commas, that they are always more confident when Nationals in. But that's, I mean, I just think that's a little bit of
this might be perceived more than anything.
Yeah.
And I think there is no doubt, you know, in some ways, I kind of like Stuart Nash's philosophy that, you know, government's supposed to enable, and whether that's, you believe that's what they do or not is irrelevant, but I kind of like that role in the sense that, you know, I think the lesson you kind of take out of that is there's some, you know, difference in policies. There's some areas where they agree. You know, who thought the Greens and National would be both agreeing that rents was an area that has not been dealt with properly through this process, you know? And it's interesting when you get them in isolation because they don't know what they're saying to saying on each podcast. But I think fundamentally, you know, what this takes to me is that, you know, Chloe talked about some of the businesses that had maybe managed to move online and use social media to just promote differently. And we've seen many clients do that. I think, though, and Andrew Bailey's got some points that there will be some very established businesses there that the idea of pivoting, you know, the old word that's become a buzzword, it's easier said than done.
Yep.
And I think the lesson I think, you know, every business needs to, I think, take out of those conversation is that you are control of your own destiny to some point here, and what you do to become more agile in the next whatever period of time you want to pick is probably pretty important, because businesses that have been agile, and we've seen that, Greg and Anna, you know, you've got clients stories at the Wazoo, we can talk about it. People have been agile, been able to diversify their revenue, think on their feet, use technology, you know, think differently, not be scared of a bit of change, are probably going to be all right, because they'll constantly adapt. And I think the overall message, I think, is that what we're experiencing now is accelerating change faster than we've probably seen in buying trends.
Yep.
I was seeing, you know, a report on online purchases yesterday, and that's gone up something like 30%. Now that's going to be the constant. People's behaviors have changed to online now. So yeah, I think, you know, government's going to is playing a role, and you know, we'll have our allegiances and thoughts on that. But you're right, nothing's fundamentally going to be that different from the government of how they do it. It'll be tinkering around the edges.
And the, I mean, the Stuart Ness highlighted that with that, he quoted that study from the States, wasn't it, that 5 years of digital enablement happened in 6 weeks or 8 weeks of lockdown or whatever it was. And actually, I was doing a cash flow, some spotlight reporting for a client this morning, and I had to get one of our managers to help me because I shouldn't have been doing it, but never mind. And Christy looked at it and said, I think there's a mistake here. And it, what do you know what it was? Because there was this massive spike in revenue in April 2020 online. Yeah. And yeah. I'm like, I don't think it's not a mistake. It wasn't a mistake.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looked like something had gone wrong with their, because, you know, last year was, you know, way down here. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, but yeah, the online had just bolted.
It's, I still feel if we bring it back to the podcast, in the compared to confidence, we do, particularly with National and Labor, we do operate almost within the margin of error from a business point of view. The differences, there are some more extreme policies with the Greens economically, things like a wealth tax.
But also you could say that from ACT in some ways, Greg, you know, they've got some, you know, and whether you call it drastic or not, but they've got some very different views on how we should be dealing with some of the economic stuff. And
well, that's exactly what Len to saying is that the only, it's a shame we didn't get ACT on as well, because their small business approach or their business approach is quite different in terms of freeing up cash. Mm. Now, the cause and effect, I think one thing that's frustrated me continually over this election campaign is that people or parties say things and they think it can happen in isolation. Everything has a cause and effect. And it really drives me up the wall when they come along and say, oh, we can do this, and you go, and what about all the things that will be cause of it, you know? And it's basically just clickbait statements. So people go, yeah, down there. But if we come back to the factors that from a small business point of view, is there going to be anything materially different for the business? Probably not. Both parties are very focused on reducing compliance. National came out and been pushing for some time, as have ACT, to remove the RMA, and I've seen our Labor has joined on that one as well. So really the question would be is, if we're trying to guess into the future, the post, and unless Labor are in such a difficult position that it empowers the Green to flex their muscles, or the same happens with National that allows ACT to flex their muscles, whoever's government after the election will pretty much be business as usual, except for around the fringes. The question would be, which no one's talking about, is the level of debt. And it's something that concerns me. I have clients ringing up and saying, can I get more money from the government? I said, you realise it's a loan. And there's this mindset up there that it's free money, and it's not. And even if it's money given in the forms of the wage grants, and I'm certainly not criticising, I think the wage subsidies were absolutely saviour, it has to be paid back. And we're talking about generational paybacks. Mm. And that generation.
I heard David Seymour describe it, and I think, yeah, he's probably, you know, he's painting a picture, but he said, we are today making decisions that will impact kids in intermediate school on the debt that we're taking on. And he's not wrong. But we're not talking about it much. That's
the point. And so when we're talking about business confidence, when we're talking about such a massive consumption of debt, and I, with all due respect to Labor's top tax rate, they pick up, what, $500 million a year maximum by pushing that, and it's not even a coin found in the back pocket of your sock.
No.
Compared to what the debt is. So that is purely politicising, saying we're not letting the rich pricks get away with it, but it means nothing. And if they're going to, you know, so my real concern is the only way we will pay this debt off as New Zealand Limited is by growing.
Cannot, which Andrew Bailey, fair to say, he said the only way we're going to get out of this is growing the economy.
We have to grow the economy, and we are a small, an SME-based economy. I know you can look at the Fonterras, etc., but the whole confidence, everything is driven from that. And I'm fearful that we kind of are so narrow-focused that we're not saying, hang on, what's happening 10 years out? How's our economy going to grow so that we're not paying this debt for that long? I mean, with all due respects, when we came out of the GFC and then hitting the earthquake, you know, Christchurch quake, etc., as a country, New Zealand did outstandingly well to get our debt down. Labor came out and said that they were going to maintain those debt ratios, obviously before COVID came along. So, understandably, that got thrown out the window. But I haven't seen anything that would invigorate the economy in a sustained manner that would mean that debt get down. I think people just sort of go, the number's so big, it's not on my mortgage, it doesn't matter. And I care for that.
Are, you know, Grant Robinson and you know, whomever else, having those conversations behind closed doors, but we're not seeing them in the political debate at the moment because we're spending too much time discussing fake news and other things that are much more media clickbait, you know, acceptable. Like, are we not? Because I mean, that's a bit like your question on tax, Stu. Are we not having the actual, you know, grown up conversations because we're spending too much time talking about a load of rubbish?
Well, I think a good example of this is, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like our interest payments are going to be the same as what we spend on police. And so, you know, that means money has got to come from somewhere to make that happen. And, you know, that what Labour did when, you know, with the Key government and, you know, arguably rightly so, oh, well, we've not been spending on infrastructure, we've not been spending on hospital. But the grown-up conversation is to have, we have less money to spend as a country, so we can't do everything. And so part of this conversation, I think to Anna's point, is we are not talking about the real issues that we cannot continue what we've been used to over the last 3-5 years. And we were very fortunate that we had an economy that, you know, we didn't dip and we were better off than some other nations, but we still had to reduce our debt through that process. And so we're going to have that, but we are very short-term focused. You know, society at the moment is more short-term focused than it has ever been. So, yeah, I think it's a fair point. I don't think we're talking about the real issues at hand, and I don't think people understand it as no. well.
Agree. I feel that that it was heartening to hear both Collins and Ardern say that they supported a 4-year term, which in itself takes, I mean, basically you have 1 year in election in a political cycle that's not involved with the election. Yeah. You know, it's a I spoke to Bill English some time ago, and we were talking about stats, and this is quite interesting because both Nash and Bailey talked about using CRM way, you know, that businesses should know who their customers. And I was actually really impressed that Bailey said that he actually is the only MP with a CRM system. I thought that was quite funny. But he's right. And look, in your podcast, you talked about what Xero are doing, and it is knowing your customer. So if we turn around and say, what's happening with stats, what's happening with your business? I mean, let's come back to Bill English. He said that they were using real data, and he said there is a family I know of in Rotorua that's fourth generation on benefit, we can actually put in place plans that will change it. But this is a 20-year plan. Now, we're going to do it, but there's no political benefit of doing it. And unfortunately, so from all sides of the house, they've got to keep their jobs. So their jobs in there. But if I spin that around, I think Anna's just having a bit of technical problems with, so that's why you're hearing more of me than Anna. But if you spin it around as what Nash and Bailey are saying, please, if you're in small business, use your data. Understand who your clients are, right down to actually who are your clients. And even if you have a transactional, I mean, you know, how many people go into a retail store and think, oh, it's just transactional, but actually through anything as basic as a, buying a coffee and getting every 10th coffee free to whatever.
Yeah.
It's a way of actually understanding. I do believe that it's heartening to hear that the two major parties driving that and reinforcing that.
Yeah, and look, we're coming to the end, so I'll just do a bit of wrap up here. And one of the things, we've lost Anna, so you've heard, Anna can hear us, but we can't hear Anna. I think one of the things I thought was really interesting about, and I didn't get to this question with Chloe, but I was going to ask it about from a marketing point of view, what we could learn from MPs. And I thought both of them made a really good point about you've got to have a good value proposition and you've got to have a good product. And I think, you know, at the moment for business owners out there, you know, we're talking about what the government's potentially could do and what the new government is, whoever the party is, of what they're proposing. But, you know, taking control of knowing your customer, like Greg said, you know, as Andrew Bailey and Stuart Nash said, you know, understanding what your product is, what's your value proposition, and getting out and talking to people and selling that is the key thing you can control, and being really good at it, I think is awesome. So look, we'll wrap up there because we're out of time. Hopefully everyone enjoyed our random rant on the election. Look, Anna's putting a big thing up. Look, make sure you all vote. Like, that's our big message. Yep. You know, I think if you don't vote, you don't have a say. I'm a bit of a believer in that. We'll do once we've the elections are done, we'll do a bit of wrap up. And interestingly, all the people we've interviewed are more than happy to come back on the podcast. We might do a post election sort of wrap up with the sort of the new Minister for Small Business, or it might be the existing one. Who knows? Yeah. But we'll do that. But thanks, Greg and Anna, for your time today, and we'll speak to everyone soon again on the podcast. Thanks, everyone.